Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I'm across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason.
How you doing?
I am swell.
You got you're still processing the Emmys. What stage of grief have you moved on to with the Emmy nominations now? Are you at acceptance? Are you still in denial?
I think I'm disappointed in just the TV Academy because I want them to do right by television and they didn't, and they did last year. So I thought, oh, great. And this is a big step or two back. So disappointed in them. But overall, after Dan and I went back and forth in our little critic's take on the Emmys, I'm kind of over it now because, you know, the world's got bigger problems, but it is what we do. So we have to make it important, and
yes,
in our lives it is important and obviously super relevant, but yeah, some weird fluctuations and frustrations. I'm sure we'll get into that, but I'm okay now.
Okay, well, before we get into the Emmys, we are going to deep dive in there. I feel you did write a couple reviews in the last week we should at least check in on. I hear that a meteor might strike the earth.
Yeah, it's supposed to hit the earth. Yeah. Why do you make me laugh like that? I don't know.
I don't know. Meteors, you know, they can kill. This is the Salvation on CBS. It's a CBS summer series. If I could summarize your review, your review is a story about a man who is pondering why there need to be reviews of CBS summer series.
Or any network summer series.
Because I got
to
be honest, if I'm the executive producer of Salvation, I would be driven insane by your review because it's not really about Salvation. I mean, your review basically says, you know what? If you can imagine what a CBS summer series about a meteor potentially hitting the earth and the scientists and government people who are maybe going to try to stop it, you can imagine Salvation. That's it. That's what the show is. And if that's what you want to while the hours away in the summertime, go right ahead. But let me ponder some more existential things in the meantime. That's basically the review.
Yeah, that's very spot on of you. I'm hoping that I can point to that in the future and say to my editors, I don't think it's a good idea that I ever review another broadcast drama. I think that Dan should get all those now.
Sorry, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's something like, and I can pick it out myself, but unless there's something like that is going to at least try something different. I mean, I'm not a big fan of This Is Us, but at least that's trying to be something different, a little bit, a more mature work of art, or something that is so creatively tongue-in-cheek, like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or Jane the Virgin. Yes, I would totally want to do that. But the rest of it, I mean, these paint-by-numbers dramas, like, I don't have time.
Your James Patterson Zoo, your Stephen King's Under the Dome, and yeah, This Is Salvation. This is another high concept with a little bit of sci-fi thrown in. Your Extants, I suppose, would also fall in that category. There's a section of the CBS television factory from which these shows are extruded. And here is a new one. I will say, as a science nerd, the bad astronomer Phil Plait is the science advisor for this show, which means that I feel fairly... He wrote a book called Death from the Skies, which is about all the ways that the universe can kill us. And I am sure the science here is good. And beyond that, I had the same thought that you did, which is like, oh, it's a CBS summer series. Okay, I don't really want to watch that, but I get that it's there. And if I was in for some light entertainment, I mean, you know, I feel bad because sometimes I do the damning with faint praise thing a lot. But like you do it here, and I think it's true, which is like, look, CBS knows what they're doing. They know what this show is. And there's obviously an audience for a light entertainment show in the summer on CBS. And this is it. But does it need more analysis than that? And your review suggests no, it does not.
Well, because there's the things that I do point out about it are like so patently obvious. Like you know who the good guy is and the bad guy. You know that people are going to hook up together.
I think that's like part of the appeal of those CBS procedurals, exactly. Right? Is that it's got clear good guys and bad guys, and you've got the comfort of knowing you know what you're going to see more or less. You know how it's going to play out, and yeah.
I did use the large part. Large upper portion of that review basically making my stance like I don't ever want to review a show like this again. Because I honestly, it's not like I can't judge it for what it is, but at this point I can't also lie. I don't like for me it's lying, literally lying to say, oh yeah, this was parts of this are good, because I can't get past the like why would you part. That to me in 2017 is
right,
and I put in there, I'm like, people who only want to watch shows like this, I don't want to know those people because I don't have anything in common with those people. And like, if they come to me and say, yeah, I loved it and I want to see 7 more of these, I'm like, I don't. You are from Mars, and we right. cannot have
but,
a conversation.
But have no fear, because you will, because CBS knows who you are and they will make this show for you.
Yes, exactly.
I get it. You spent, to be fair, you spent about 450 words of your 1,000-word review on why you didn't want to write the review and 550 on the show. So
right
more
there.
Than 50% uh-huh. about the actual show, you know.
Yeah. That's yes, I'm gonna, it's I'm a cry for help. That one. Yeah, it's a cry for help. I'm going to keep that one. And just like when it's time for, as we're doling out things, if there's a suggestion that I do something like this in the future, I'm just going to email the link. Right back to my editor.
Do you really want
this? You want this again?
Me to do this.
Yeah.
All right. What about I'm Sorry on True TV?
I liked it. I think Andrea Savage is funny. I think the show actually has potential. As I noted there, it's like it's on a channel that not everybody is really watching with any regularity. Some people might not even know what True TV is.
Former Court TV, right?
Right. And so people are going to have a hard time finding it, even though the vast majority of them are actually paying for it in their cable package. There is not really a show on there. You know, it's got Impractical Jokers and all this. I don't think it's a place that has a go-to show, just one of them where you go and you're like, I love this show, but like, what are these other freaky things? I don't think it has it. I think they're all freaky things. So she has a struggle in getting this show off the ground. But other places have done it. Other places where you would not go. Like, I go to TV Land is not one of my favorite stops for shows, but I will go watch Teachers on TV Land and Playing House on you know, and TBS has got a better track record now of comedy. But yeah, her first struggle is getting people to find out what True TV is and where is it on their channel. And then once they get there, I think they showed us 2 episodes, so it's very little that I actually saw. I liked, for the most part, what I saw. I think it has a really interesting cast. It gave me lots of hope for, and it's, I think, in some ways, again, it's another example of how fortunate we are to in this platinum age to have, like a show that, a channel that doesn't really do a whole lot of stuff and doesn't do a whole lot of good stuff, and then cranks out something that could actually end up being really good. I mean, the Tom Everett Scott is such a good co-star as her husband.
I love him. I'm sad that he's not in more things. I've loved him since That Thing You Do.
Yeah, he's just really good, and he's good in this. He grounds her, because like I said in the review, she's just inappropriate all the time. Her other problem is that it's like a wince-inducing comedy. It's basically the female Curb Your Enthusiasm, and that doesn't... But everybody... There's other shows doing that. I don't want to say that Andrea Savage is doing Curb Your Enthusiasm. Lots of shows are doing Curb Your Enthusiasm, but the critical part of that show is to put Larry David and Person X into a scenario that is embarrassing, and then have them maximize the embarrassment, you know, tenfold, and you just kind of cringe, and that's what these shows are about. So it's kind of a well-trod field at this point.
Yeah, Tom Everett Scott, he is literally like mini Tom Hanks.
He really is.
Which and, is why know, Tom Hanks cast him in his movie, yeah, and yeah. he's still doing that, and he brings a lot to the table, too. So.
He really yeah, does. Judy Greer's in it, too. She's so fun. So.
She's great in everything. Mm-hmm. I like what you said about everybody's doing Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think it's interesting that you could maybe make the case that Curb Your Enthusiasm is the root of this whole genre of... basically writer-performer, you know, single person, kind of unlikable, living their life and dealing with stuff that is like there's so many shows like this now. And they're all, you know, a lot of them very, very good because they do seem to have a singular vision about the person and the character, and it's often the same person. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about how Curb Your Enthusiasm is kind of maybe the root of that.
Yeah, and definitely the British Office as well.
It's just oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's
and
true.
And just in a different way of like, comes, oh my god,
comes back to Ricky Gervais again.
Ricky Gervais, yes.
All right, let's talk Emmys.
Okay.
The Emmy Awards came out. You and Dan have your back and forth, like you said. I'll put a link in the show notes to that, where you, that's where you guys basically, in what looks like an email chain, just kind of let it all out mm-hmm. and taunt each other a little bit with things that one of you liked and the other one didn't, which comes up a few times. And it's a fun read, and I definitely recommend people read it. Should we go through some of these just categories and you can tell me your quick reaction to it? Is
sure.
that a good way to go
Absolutely.
Through it?
Absolutely.
I feel like we've
way.
Done this. We've been doing this podcast so long now, I feel like we've done this twice already. This is our third Emmy cycle. It's weird.
It is kind of crazy, yeah.
It is wild. So, best drama series. Got to start at the top. Better Call Saul, The Crown, The Handmaid's Tale, House of Cards, This Is Us, Stranger Things, and Westworld.
Yeah. So the glaring...
House of Cards?
Yeah, it's you know, it frustrates me because I don't see it. Like, I don't... You know, people who want to say... That, and it's funny because THR covers this all the time. That they're, you know, I'm in the industry enough to know that this goes on, but I'm removed from it. And maybe part of me doesn't want to know that all, because it's the same thing with for Academy Awards and everything else. There's campaigning, and you kind of want to think that, like, okay, well, campaigning's not going to do it. Like, the movie is either great or it's not, or the show is either great or it's not. But, you know, as THR noted, that this year Netflix was like not messing around with like having its, you know, Emmy parties and 4-year consideration mm-hmm. parties and doing all the campaigning, whether it's advertising, you know, and Us and Variety and other things, and just having these screenings where they bring people out, Emmy voters who, you know, let's be honest, there some of them probably didn't watch their supplied DVDs or their supplied links. Some sure. of them just didn't do the work. And that is a fact of life. And if a couple of lazy people or a couple of dozen lazy people didn't do their work, but they got an invite to go to a party where they can dress up and go get free drinks and watch this House of Cards, you wonder, was that enough to sway it? Because I doesn't make sense to me. I don't think House of Cards has been good since the second season. And obviously I'm pissed off that they didn't put the Americans in there, but here's the thing that drives me a little crazy. How do you nominate a series after ignoring it for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, and you nominate a series, you get it into the category, and then you pull it out the next year? I mean, that's true of Mr. Robot too, but like, I think Westworld is deserving. If there's anything, one thing that our back and forth did is it didn't like... I like Westworld a lot more than Dan does, but
yes.
I thought Westworld was definitely going to get nominated, and I think it deserves to get nominated.
I agree on both counts.
Yeah, and so that works for me. House of Cards doesn't work on any level.
Yeah, I want to point to another critic's back and forth, because this is a format now, that Margaret Lyons and James Poniewozik at the New York Times did, where I just want to read what Margaret Lyons said, which was, how can someone watch The Leftovers and House of Cards and think, I prefer House of Cards?
Yeah.
Just kind of can't understand. But I mean, I guess it can be explained with inertia. I mean, a lot of these can be explained. Like, inertia explains House of Cards. This Is Us, it's clearly, oh, you know, we can throw a bone to a network show. We can bring it mm-hmm. for the first time in like 5 years, I think,
five years,
a network
yeah.
show got mm-hmm. nominated for Best Drama. I get those two. I get Westworld is high profile HBO, especially with no Game of Thrones eligible this year. And I agree with you creatively. I think Westworld was very good. And then that leaves us with Better Call Saul, which I can kind of get why.
Yeah.
The Crown on Netflix is really interesting, and then Stranger Things, that must be the we're hip, we can nominate some buzz show because that one surprised me. But I'm famously only I like Stranger Things, but I'm much more lukewarm on it than almost everybody else I've talked to. So.
Yeah, I think the weakness in this field, other than the fact that it doesn't have the Americans. In it, which it has to have, but
or The Leftovers
was never going to get in. Rectifier was never going to get in. I mean, sure. that's just. I mean, if there's, I think
it's acceptance
there's
again.
Yeah,
acceptance,
and there's a certain amount of tea leaf reading that you can do on Emmy people, and then the rest of it is just like you're kind of crazy. Like for me, I'm like, I knew that This Is Us was probably going to get in, and Dan felt that way too. It's just you can kind of see what the buzz is about, and if the Emmys are going to get one of these people in, it's going to be This Is Us. I definitely thought Handmaid's Tale was a slam dunk, even though Dan didn't, and he didn't because it was Hulu. But I just thought that it's too good, and it's too people are talking about it in this world that these Emmy voters are in. Stranger Things, I think it doesn't surprise me, and it doesn't actually annoy me too much. I think it's really interesting. It's a show that became kind of, it definitely was zeitgeisty. There's no question about it. I watched it with my kids, which I can't do with a lot of shows, and they loved it. As a critic, I really liked it, but I saw all the flaws in it. But I still was entertained by it. I would say I'm borderline whether that one should really be in here. House of Cards should definitely not be in here. But I'm actually not borderline, and I don't think This Is Us should be in here. I know why it's in there, but I don't think it should be in there. It's not. I mean, it's good for a network show, but it's so completely manipulative. But a lot of people don't care that they're being manipulated, and you can see the little puppet strings, and it's all about making you cry through a box of Kleenex every week. But the acting is good. The writing, I think, is manipulative, but some people like that. So I wouldn't have picked that one. And if you're going to be totally go by like upper tier, amazing standards, then yeah, Stranger Things and This Is Us probably shouldn't be there. But clearly the outlier there is House of Cards. That's such a joke. I can't believe it.
Oh well, best comedy series. This one, I was impressed with this as I watched the nominees be read. Mm-hmm. I thought this is sending a message in terms of the content of a bunch of these shows. So it's Atlanta, Black-ish, Master of None, mm-hmm. Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep. It's an interesting collection, and Atlanta going in, I think, is especially heartening.
Yeah, I think that's really big. I think that was one that Dan and I said we thought was a slam dunk. But at the same time, I think we would both be easily pressed to say that we wouldn't have been surprised if it didn't get in. Just because it's so different and, diversity is not a strong point in the industry. So, but it definitely is in this category. So it was nice to see it. I think my surprise, well, Modern Family, obviously, it's crazy. It's insane that that's even in there. But I think my surprise, I thought something else was going to unseat Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So that's my surprise.
Hmm.
I mean, other than being stunned that, I mean, I would have put money that this was the year Modern Family was going to finally, like, because Homeland finally got ignored, right? So
right.
I thought this was the year that Modern Family finally got ignored, but it wasn't. But I did think, as an outlier, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt might have could have been unseated by any number of shows.
But it didn't.
I mean, and Girls is not even in there, and God, what is the show that already won this award or hasn't won the Emmy yet? But it's the oh my God, Transparent. How could I?
Oh
forget
yeah, Transparent. Sure,
I mean, Transparent's not in there either. So I think that's a kind of a maybe. If you go back and you talk about campaigning, perhaps that's a failure on Amazon's part not to get, I mean, maybe they just thought it was going to be a slam dunk that it would be in there. I don't know. So it's an interesting category though, for sure. I hope either Atlanta or Master of None get noticed, but I'm going to think Veep is probably a strong contender.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what else they have. There's a limited series category that's pretty good that has Big Little Lies. I know you love that one, but Dan liked it. Fargo, Feud, Genius, and The Night Of.
Yeah, I hate to say it. To me, the winner in this category very clearly is Fargo.
Sure.
And then I would go with The Night Of after that. I think it's really interesting that Genius got in from National Geographic. Good for them. But I would be stunned if any other show besides Big Little Lies gets the victory. Really stunned. Because you could say that Feud and Fargo are going to knock out each other. because it's from FX. But you could make the claim that HBO has two in there as well. But Big Little Lies, let's not kid ourselves, that's going to win.
Hmm. So, can you explain to me the TV movie category? Because it has Black Mirror and Sherlock in it.
I don't understand. I looked at Black Mirror and I was like, I mean, you know, it's they pronounce it San Junipero in the series, but yes, it's San Junipero.
Yeah, San, but it's San Junipero is how they pronounce it because it's English people and they don't know how to pronounce it. And I will say, that is the best episode of Black Mirror, I would say, of all of the episodes.
Yes.
I think it's the best one. It's wonderful. It shows, hey, Black Mirror isn't always something that makes you want to die. Sometimes it can be uplifting and sweet as well. Right. One time out of 16, but one time, the one time. But like Netflix has decided what's the weakest category, and Black Mirror, those are all standalone. We'll just say it's a movie anthology series, I guess. It's the Netflix Sunday night movie featuring Black Mirror. And then Sherlock, the same way. I guess, yeah, it's a series of TV movies, if you want to call it that. But there, it's got continuing characters, so I'm not sure I really understand either of those. I mean, it's nice they got nominations and they found a category that they could just kind of claim to be in order to give themselves more guaranteed nominations. But they do seem really weird. So it's individual episodes. San Junipero of Black Mirror and the Lying Detective episode of Sherlock going up against The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks on HBO, Dolly Parton's Christmas of Many Colors on NBC, crossing my fingers, and The Wizard of Lies on HBO. So
I think in fairness to HBO, if I was HBO, I'd be like, hey, wait a minute. We made two movies.
Yeah.
These are actual movies. So they have definitely a complaint there. But I'm pulling for Black Mirror.
Yeah, that's a great, for people who haven't seen it, people who've been shying away from Black Mirror because they hear that it's really dark and makes, you got to be in a really, the right mood to even hit them, because let them hit you, because it's grim. I binged that for a podcast a few months ago, and you know, there's some really good ones in there, there's some bad ones in there, but it's really dark. Watch San Junipero. It is wonderful and not like the rest of the series, and I couldn't recommend it enough. It is also funny, they did a movie-length episode this last season, which was, I think, Hated in the Nation, which is like a terrorist drama. I actually thought it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's the last episode of the season, but that's not the one. It wasn't their best episode, but it was actually like the size and shape of a feature. I think it was like 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
San Junipero. Okay.
Yeah,
fair enough. It's good.
I mean, you're right. It's their best episode.
Let's nominate good
series,
things. I mean, at what point are you nominating things just completely out of category? Just nominate some actor in this category? Yeah, you actor, you Matthew Vaughn. You are a great TV movie.
You're a
okay.
Movie. Yeah,
sure.
I mean, that's kind of where we are, right? That's the stunning part of it.
Interesting collection in the talk show series. Samantha Bee is in here for the first time. Jimmy Kimmel is in there. John Oliver, who won last year, is in there. James Corden is in there. You'll notice that and Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher are in there. So Colbert is in and Jimmy Fallon is out, which is not, I think, surprising given the last year, but it's still interesting.
Right. I think that is not surprising. I think it's just. The thing that is not just is that Seth Meyers is not in there and Bill Maher is.
And Bill Maher is, yeah.
I mean,
I agree with you.
Just.
Yeah. I winced at the real time with Bill Maher thing. It's like, come on. But Sam B in there is great. I think that's
good to
I think
see
that's
her
really great.
There. Yeah. Good to see her in there.
Yeah. It's interesting to see all the Daily Show alumni in there, but not the Daily Show.
Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah. Okay, let's move into some acting awards. Best
sure.
Actress in a drama.
Actress in a drama.
Actress
okay.
in a drama.
Yeah.
I'm going right off the Hollywood Reporter nominees list here.
Nice.
So
okay.
Somebody at the Hollywood Reporter decided this is the way to go, and sounds good to me. So Claire Foy in The Crown, Elizabeth Moss in The Handmaid's Tale, Robin Wright in House of Cards, Viola Davis in How to Get Away with Murder, Carrie Russell in The Americans, and Evan Rachel Wood in Westworld.
Yeah, it's a good list. There's no doubt about that. And I think that I think it's gonna be really, really difficult. You know, I haven't seen enough of The Crown to actually say. I mean, Claire Foy is great, but I'm not enough to see it. I have got delved deep into The Handmaid's Tale. Finally, by the way, this past week between our podcast, man, I have
I have chugged through more episodes of television in my binging to catch up and going to bed at 3 a.m. I'm getting close, but so yeah, I would think this group, that is a really strong group. I would say the odds on favorite is Elizabeth Moss. I would say don't count out Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Elizabeth Moss, that is a powerful lead performance in a show that's got a lot of buzz that makes a lot of sense to me. And Evan Rachel Wood was great. Yeah. If people haven't seen Westworld, like, that is a, it's not quite a Tatiana Maslany level performance. And by the way, Orphan Black was not eligible in this period because of the gap between seasons. But that is similar in the sense that Evan Rachel Wood is playing multiple, I guess the best way to put it is multiple characters, multiple personalities, because mm-hmm. she's playing a synthetic artificial intelligence who has, like, we see her at different points in her life, and she's playing roles while also having kind of an underlying personality. And then there are amazing scenes where they, like, turn off parts of her subroutines and mm-hmm. she changes her affect. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing. So
it is. And also, yeah, I mean, and for everybody who does that in that show, you have to really respect how good they are at that. And let's not forget they're also doing that naked.
Yes, a lot of it, they're totally naked.
It's really vulnerable. So
you get double points on the from the judges when you mm-hmm. when you perform the tricks.
I can't imagine it, but yeah.
It's diving rules or something that's happening there. I don't know. Best actor in a drama: Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us, Anthony Hopkins from Westworld, Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul, Matthew Reese from The Americans, Liev Schreiber from Ray Donovan. Is that still on? Kevin Spacey from House of Cards and Milo Ventimiglia, not one of my favorites, from This Is Us.
Okay. My prediction in this category, and these stories will be coming in the future because pre-September, but just looking at this, it's really weird lineup.
Yes.
I think that the best actor in that current lineup is Matthew Reese. And I think Matthew Reese and Kerry Russell being nominated when the show didn't get nominated is great. I think it's a bad sign that the show didn't. So I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock on them actually winning. I think he deserves it. But I would just say, looking at this lineup, Sterling K. Brown is going to win this.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To This Is Us. Well, that would be another nod to network television, I suppose.
I mean, unless they split their vote, I'm a little surprised that Milo is in this category, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, not to knock his performance. I think he's in a career where he was sort of like knocked as like a good looking guy and not much of an actor. I think he does a good job in This Is Us, and a believable job, but outstanding lead actor, I'm not so sure. And you know what? Don't rule out as a dark horse, if actually they're paying attention to performances, Bob Odenkirk could win this as well.
Hmm. My apologies to all the Milo Ventimiglia fans out there, but it's totally not the actor's fault, but you know, I've hated him since Gilmore Girls. It's entirely Amy Sherman Palladino's fault for making that character that I hated.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Milo. And then he was in Heroes and I didn't particularly like that either. So, Anthony Hopkins, I have seen some positive words about him, but they tend to be those backhanded compliments, which is like, only Anthony Hopkins could save all of the bizarre, expositional dialogue that was required in Westworld, which I don't entirely agree. I think he landed some gravitas to it, but he's playing Anthony Hopkins, basically. He's playing the Anthony Hopkins part. He might as well be Hannibal Lecter at that point. It is just the Anthony Hopkins part. He's a great actor, but at this point, you know, he's playing parts that are the parts that are written for him, essentially. And it's fun.
Yeah, he's... great in this. There's no question. I don't know if he's the lead.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. Kind of really not. That's kind
no.
of Jeffrey Wright's the lead, I think.
And it really is Evan Rachel Wood that carries the show. So, and with some Thandie Newton and.
Yeah, Thandie Newton. Those two are the most important over any of the men. I would say I'm going to forget the movie that he was in, or it might have been last year because they all bleed together. But Anthony Hopkins was in a movie. HBO movie, and he was wonderful in it. He was not Anthony Hopkins, like you and I are. You just said he's Anthony Hopkins. He does these things, and
he doesn't have to, but he gets a lot of parts
a lot of those parts
that are the Yeah. We want an Anthony Hopkins type here. Hey, Anthony Hopkins is available. All right.
Right. Yes.
It's a little bit. Yeah.
So
it's
fine. Yeah. He was in a movie with Sir, what's his name? From Battles. Not, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, one of those sirs.
Sir Pat.
One of those. Yes. Mm-hmm. Patrick Stewart?
Yeah. He was in a movie, HBO movie with Sir Pat, and they were both fantastic. But Anthony Hopkins was like a fading Shakespearean actor, and he's really good. It's basically a stage adaptation. They turned into a movie. He's wonderful in it. I only throw that in there because we just said, oh, it's Anthony Hopkins playing Anthony Hopkins. So, yeah.
All right. Best actress in a comedy. Really interesting group here. So Pamela Adlon in Better Things, Jane Fonda in Grace and Frankie, Allison Janney in Mom, Ellie Kemper in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep, Tracy Ellis Ross in Blackish, and Lily Tomlin in Grace and Frankie. A lot of Grace and Frankie in there. I guess their names are in the title, so.
I hate this category.
I
hate this category. I'm happy. Obviously, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has to be in here, and she should win it, probably. The one that makes me the happiest is Pamela Adlon getting in here. I think Tracy Ellis Ross does really excellent work in Blackish. She deserves the nomination. I would say the other four, I would say I could easily replace all four of them. Allison Janney is an excellent actress, and Ellie Kemper does great in Kimmy Schmidt. But I could replace those two, I think, in an instant, and I don't even get me started on
Grace and Frankie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Best actor in a comedy series. Anthony Anderson, Blackish. Aziz Ansari, Master of None. Zach Galifianakis, Baskets. Donald Glover, Atlanta. William H. Macy, Shameless. And Jeffrey Tambor, Transparent.
Yeah, I mean, a stunning lineup. You got to love Donald Glover in there. But let's just circle around to the negativity because that's where I want to start.
Yeah, okay.
William H. Macy is not in a comedy. He's in a drama. And he's a great actor, and I love him. I just hate his character in Shameless. And this is another rubber stamping of him getting in there. Jeffrey Tambor, you have to have in there because he's magnificent, and he's won in the past. But it makes you, again, wonder why they didn't nominate Transparent in the first place. But, yeah, the shocker is Donald Glover. I totally want him. I wanted him in there. I want him to win. I want him to be in there. Maybe a bigger shocker is even Zach Galifianakis being in there for Baskets. Like that, I look at that and I'm like, Louis Anderson being nominated last year and this year was such a stroke of genius. I loved it. But I look at this list and I'm like, and Aziz Ansari, so this is a fantastic lineup of surprises, but who is watching Baskets at the Academy? If you're not watching The Americans or Transparent, you're watching Baskets? What the hell?
Yeah.
But Donald Glover's got to win that. Come on.
Yeah. Please. Let's see. What else? Anything else that we should get to? You want to go to the supporting? You want to talk about those a little bit?
Or would you like
to talk about TV movies where Benedict Cumberbatch, of course, is nominated for his film role in Sherlock?
Yeah, it's terrible. We could do supporting if you want to do that. Because we don't have anything else left, right, do we?
Okay, no. Supporting in a drama, Uzo Aduba for Orange is the New Black. Millie Bobby Brown for Stranger Things. She's great. Mm-hmm. Anne Dowd in The Handmaid's Tale. Christy Metz in This Is Us. Thandi Newton in Westworld. And Samira Wiley in The Handmaid's Tale.
No arguments on that group. If Thandi Newton doesn't win it, it's a tragedy.
I agree. I like Millie Bobby Brown. I think that character was really interesting in Stranger Things. She's my favorite thing in that show. But Westworld, like Thandi Newton's performance in that was amazing.
Yeah, I could definitely see Millie Bobby Brown winning it. I could. But Thandi Newton is the one that really definitely needs to win that.
All right. Supporting in a drama, Jonathan Banks in Better Call Saul, David Harbour in Stranger Things, Ron Cephas Jones in This Is Us, Michael Kelly in House of Cards, John Lithgow in The Crown, Mandy Patinkin in Homeland. There's your Homeland nomination. And Jeffrey Wright in Westworld. World.
That is a doozy of a lineup. I gotta say. So also, just because there's seven, it goes back to my running ramp that they need 10 in every category. Because if you're gonna dip your toe in seven, why stop at seven?
You got 500 shows now. Why not nominate 10? Yeah.
But boy, that's a super strong 10. I think you might have to make the argument that Michael Kelly, who I think is a fine actor, is probably the weak link in that group. Anybody else could win it. I would love to see David Harbour win for Stranger Things. That'd be amazing. But I think it's going to be, I think it's going to really come down to Jeffrey Wright and Ron Cephas Jones. Those are the two guys I think you're going to.
Hmm. Supporting in a comedy, actress Vanessa Bayer, Saturday Night Live nominations. I don't understand these. But Vanessa Bayer, Saturday Night Live, Anna Chlumsky and Veep, Leslie Jones and Saturday Night Live, Judith Light and Transparent, Catherine Hahn and Transparent, and Kate McKinnon on Saturday Night Live. I like, you know, Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones a lot, but it seems really weird that sketch comedy performances are in this category.
It always drives me crazy. I think the winner here is going to be Kate McKinnon. She's going to win that. If I had my druthers, I'd give that to Anna Chlumsky. So. Yeah.
Supporting actor in a comedy, Louis Anderson in Baskets. There it is. Alec Baldwin, who's not even a cast member of Saturday Night Live. That's the Donald Trump nomination. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ty Burrell in Modern Family. Titus Burgess in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I can get behind that. Tony Hale in Veep. Yep. Matt Walsh in Veep.
Yeah. You know, Louis Anderson won this last year, didn't he?
I think that might be true.
I think it was a shocking that he was even nominated and everybody was totally pumped. And then I think he won it. I could probably just check.
He did.
But, boy, I hope they don't split votes. I would pick either Matt Walsh or Tony Hale, for that. But then again, I wouldn't be sad for Louis Anderson to win again. So there you go.
I'm gonna give a big thumbs up to Titus Burgess. He is the comedic center of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And there was a bit in the most recent, well, I guess it's now the season two, which is what got nominated here, because I think season three came out
too recently,
so that'll be for next year. There is a moment in season two that I was reduced to tears laughing, and it is entirely Titus Burgess and the writers together performing some amazing things. That's a great character, and I think that show is not on the radar without his performance. So
yeah, that's probably a good point, actually.
I think he's great in that. That's a great thing. Well, I don't know. Now we're left again with limited series and television movies, which is going to give you your, exciting things that aren't movies. So, anything else we should mention, or is that all that we should talk about?
You know, let's do something different. Let's do writing for drama and writing for comedy.
I love the writing categories. I know they're not sexy because people want to give awards to actors, but I always look at the writing categories. They're the most interesting. So drama writing, it's Americans for The Soviet Division, Better Call Saul for Chicanery, The Crown for Assassins, The Handmaid's Tale for The Pilot, Stranger Things for The Pilot, basically, episode one, and Westworld for the Westworld finale.
It is really, really good, and that's a stellar lineup. And I don't know. I mean, well, you answer this question. What would you go for in this category?
Well, I haven't seen all of these. I've only seen half of them. So of those, I don't know. I think Westworld was really well done and pulled a lot of threads together in that final episode.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
But The Handmaid's Tale was really well done, and doing an adaptation and setting it up for it to run as a series from a, you know, from out of a novel is tough. And like I said about Stranger Things, like, I like Stranger Things, but I'm not going to put it on a pedestal. It is a shaggy, loving tribute to 80s movies and Stephen King novels, and it's fine. But I wouldn't. Yeah. That's where I draw the line.
Exactly. And I will say, having just watched a couple days ago, watched Chicanery. Oh my God, it's so good. It is just it's a outstanding piece of work, I have to say. So I have no idea what's going to happen. But also The Soviet Division. I think the Americans. I don't understand people complaining about the Americans this year, but it's slow. But that was a well written episode, so loved it. I don't know who's going to win that category.
And on the comedy side, two episodes of Atlanta, two episodes of Veep, A Master of None, and A Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to pick on this one. I gotta say, I don't know what they're going to do. I think the Thanksgiving episode of Master of None is amazing. I really do. I think it's amazing. I think both of the Veep categories could easily be winners, and I'm gonna say I think Atlanta is gonna win it, and probably for Streets on Lock, because the other one is sort of the crazy show. Indifferent. I think that the ones that to look for who might win on this are Atlanta and Master of None, and which would be a little bit of a surprise because I think that would upset the Veep cat. The Veep is probably coming in as the contender, but I think it's going to be. I mean, that Thanksgiving episode of Master of None is really amazing.
Anything else we need to cover in the Emmys?
I think that's it. I'll just add, you know, again, my complaint, and I hope that they take it seriously this time. And, you know, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I have actually heard from people in the Academy who've reached out and said they've read some of the stuff I've done and listened to me. They expanded the categories once when I did this big rant in THR saying that they should, and they did it right after that. And I heard from people who said that had an influence. And last year, you know, I came out and said, you absolutely have to do Americans this year. And it hadn't been nominated for the first three. And it was like, here's the chance to save face and take it back from the whatever. So I don't know. I hope that they listen, because I'm definitely going to do another rant on, and I've already did it in my piece with Dan, is getting to 10 categories. It's just, what harm could it be to expand every category to 10 nominees? I could fill that in my sleep. So, I mean,
and if everybody's happy, everybody, right. More nominees means more happy people. I guess it means more losers on award night, but it's like more buzz, more promotion of shows, which I'm sure the Academy would like. And it's not like the pool hasn't dramatically grown in the last 5 years, 10 years.
Right. And I saw people, some response on Twitter, people were like, oh, it didn't help movies. And it's, you know, it's not going to save them from nominating the wrong thing. I'm like, no, but it gives, if you have 10, A, there's so much great work out there across the dial. This is, you and I talk about this every week. So it's easy to, I can fill 10 at any category. I can fill 10, but are you going to have two things that you rubber stamped, or two, like, what the hell? Like, I mean, let's forget. I mean, we didn't even touch on it, but they nominated Barb from Stranger Things. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
She was not a fully formed character, and she was missing most of the time. So it's like, are they going to make a mistake and have a Barb? Sure. Are they going to make a mistake and have you know, House of Cards? Sure. But I would rather have them have 7 to 8 other opportunities to get it right and expand the possibility. And then when they screw up the 1 or 2 or even 3, I'm less annoyed by that, because everybody else who needed to get noticed got noticed. You know, it gets the Americans in the category, and it makes me less pissed off.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Well, we'll talk about this more at least when the awards come out, if not before. It'll happen.
Definitely.
I want to point people to your Critics Notebook, which is the, let's take the Q&A format of the TV Talk Machine and generate an article on THR about it, which is great. I saw some familiar podcast listener names in that article, but you did answer a bunch of questions, some of them familiar. One of them, I think, we actually also answered on the podcast, but there's a lot of good stuff in there, including a mention of me and and the power rankings, which made me, I was amused that the power rankings got mentioned again.
And I think the power rankings, as we said, there's all, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that they would come back. But it's, you've made good points about how it could come back in different formats. And by the way, this is a little inside baseball, but you hilariously were the most astute person where I don't think we did it on a podcast. I think you actually sent me either a text or an email. Or maybe it was on Twitter. It was right after they did the new style of doing the year-end best of list, and they had the numbers, and he went, basically,
it's
that's
the power
what
rankings.
They said they couldn't do.
Yeah, no, we can't make a list of things with numbers. And,
with numbers?
And yeah.
That was very funny. You were very totally quick on that. You're like,
The lists of the future. We've got, I've got some follow-up letters for you. You ready for some follow-up letters?
Sure.
So Dean in the 707, who appeared in that Q&A, actually,
yes.
Said, by my calculations, RuPaul's Drag Race got 8 more Emmy nominations than Rectify. Just, I know, obviously an award to be taken seriously, he said. Now, I have friends who watch a lot of reality TV, and they like RuPaul's Drag Race a whole lot. So there, it's a different category. Rectify, not a reality competition program.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges there.
Yeah. Mm. Tom, oh, we got some, this is good. We've got some, Twin Peaks follow-up. So Tom Terrific on Twitter wrote in to say that episode 8 of Twin Peaks rocked with Lynch reflective weirdness. I loved it. It brought back memories of his old projects. I have seen episode 8 now. I look forward to seeing if you managed to get through it.
I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Are you caught up with
I'm
Twin Peaks
up.
Now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts of that I kind of liked. I kind of thought I was watching like Kiana Scotsi or something, mm-hmm. just a weird, mm-hmm. trippy video with weird music. I don't know. I felt just as ambivalent about it as I did about the show as a whole, which is there's some things in it I liked and there's some things in it that I was like, what are you doing?
Yep. So there's some things that are visually beautiful and there
indeed.
Is a whole lot of stupidity. Like
you could,
dare
I say, you could probably do a visual studies class about that episode, though.
Yeah.
Because it's got, it runs the gamut. It really does.
And it reminded me a lot of a movie I hated, The Tree of Life.
Oh, yeah, sure. Makes sense. Hobo Eric wrote in to say, this is Hobo Eric coming to you from a charred convenience store somewhere. Yeah, see, reference to Twin Peaks.
Uh-huh.
Tim, you should really stop watching Twin Peaks now. At this halfway point, you've seen what you're getting. It's not going to get any less frustrating. Why put yourself through this trauma? CBS has some nice summer shows for you to dive into. Candy Crush has lots of pretty colors. If you dare to continue, I recommend engaging with articles and recaps or podcasts after each episode. I listen to the Entertainment Weekly one. It's the only show other than Lost that I feel the viewing experience is enhanced by listening to or considering theories. It's up to you, Hobo Eric.
That's a good letter, Hobo Eric.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No chance in the world. I'm still going to keep watching, but there's no chance in the world I would want to talk. I did say on Twitter that there is not a bong that is big enough to read some of these Twin Peaks takes. And I read a couple of them.
I do a search after I read a Twin Peaks episode. Well, not number 8, but after most Twin Peaks episodes, I do a search because there's usually an analysis piece that will like notice things I didn't notice or make mm-hmm. a link that I've totally forgotten.
Right.
And I find that valuable.
Yes.
But I will say that, you know, Hobo Eric, it's great that you like the Jeff Jensen thing. I think I met Jeff Jensen at Comic-Con one year. I can't handle, even during the Lost time, I kind of gave up on his analysis because he seems to have decided now that his thing is completely weird theories based on no evidence in the text. And I guess people love that, but I find it maddening. Like in Lost too, he would have these theories that were like on the flimsiest of suggestion in the show. And it was very clearly not going to be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just ride those. And I saw one of his articles about Twin Peaks and I thought, I can't read this because mm-hmm. it's just, he's just making things up out of whole cloth. And if you want to get deep down in the conspiracy theories, great, go for it. But I had to steer away from those. And I try to work on, you know, sort of more reality-based analysis of the Twin mm-hmm. Peaks episodes. But I do those because, like I said, it's weird enough and I've forgotten enough about the old Twin Peaks that I like that there's somebody who's got a more encyclopedic knowledge than me who can say, oh, that's a reference to this thing. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, right. And then I feel better about that. But
right.
You know.
And I agree that there is value in that. And so I will say I agree with you in that. My trouble with those is that I read 4 after I had seen episode 8. I'm like, okay, let's, I know what I thought of episode 8. Let me see what other people thought. And my frustration, people I like, by the way, my frustration was like, oh my God, I hope you're okay. Because I'm sure you pulled a muscle, like especially a back muscle, bending over backwards to make that connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've all done that in the past, but this show is ripe for kind of what you just said about Jeff Jensen. But I think people who are doing it better are still making that mistake. And it's not just stretching to make a connection. I think it's apologetic.
Right.
It's like
trying to absolve David Lynch.
You're absolving David Lynch of doing something in there that is doesn't work or is just totally terrible. And well, I can't abide that.
If we drain the bong water out, what we get is episode 8 of Twin Peaks is about the sort of like initial evil that or original sin that looses the evil creatures on the world that we've seen in Twin Peaks. And that's basically, there is an interesting looking like sequence where the first atomic bomb test happens and kind of demon creatures appear and kill a bunch of people. And you get the distinct sense that this is the original sin that has led to all these terrible things happening. And fair enough, right? Although it goes on for a very, very, very long time. You know, it's fine. Whatever. The next episode is just back to being whatever Twin Peaks is. Yeah. So, I don't know. Little palate cleanser.
But even, like, I was looking at that, and there's all that analogy about how great it was that this is, like, original sin. And my very first question was, like, so you really think that, a notion of original sin started in the Second World War? What about the First World War? It was probably even worse than the Second World War.
I think you've got to go to, like, this is the science fictional premise or right. the horror movie premise inside Twin Peaks, or at least inside the writers of Twin Peaks' mind, which is, so what Mark Frost and David Lynch, is that the energies unleashed by the yes. splitting of the atom right. created a dimensional blah blah, and in came the monsters from another dimension, because this is the thing that finally pushed us over the edge.
Splitting the atoms.
It's mm-hmm. like, fair enough. That's your premise. That's mm-hmm. fine. That's
yeah. I
give it to Twin Peaks to explain why the weird things happen in this world and why there are demons in the Black Lodge possessing people, with actually giving an explanation for something that happens in the premise of the show, while simultaneously having it be the most kind of head scratching, mind boggling way of providing that explanation. That sounds about right.
Yes, that's
about
right.
That sounds. What do you mean? We gave you an answer. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, there's more Twin Peaks to come. Anyway, real name Jeff also tweeted at us and said, "You guys really don't get what people like about Twin Peaks. Seriously, you guys sounded oblivious at best." Thanks, Jeff. Thanks right, for listening.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's fine for people to like Twin Peaks. So go for it. I
literally do not care what people like about Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Though. No.
I don't. I know why I watch it. And although depending on the episode, I don't know why I watch it, but I've been enjoying the ride, and I watched the whole original series, and I think it's got some interesting things in it, and it's got some things I don't do well. It doesn't do well, and that's just how it is.
Yeah.
It is an interesting mixture. That's why I'm watching. Dean also wrote in. We're a second question from Dean, which is just, have you had time to watch the new season? Really, the answer is no time to watch anything. The new season of Broadchurch. I've got it piling up on the DVR. I just finished the second season of Broadchurch in planning to watch the third season, and I will get to it. But I want to take a little break from the English seaside town where everybody is sad.
Yeah, I haven't finished the second season, so I can't start the third. Yeah, it's very tough.
Just sadness. My Vogon Poetry, our friend the MVP,
and made my column. Yes,
yes, I saw. Can't wait for People of Earth to come back this month. It's a fun group with common interest, kind of like the Detectorists.
Mm-hmm. And I'm reviewing it. Yay!
Go good. Mm-hmm. Detectorists. I've watched more of the Detectorists now, and I just keep saying, you know, I was feeling kind of in a bad mood, and we were like, oh, do we want to watch another Handmaid's Tale? And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle that. And we were in Hulu, and I was like, Detectorists. We're going to watch another Detectorists. And it was, again, very nice. Like you said, it's kind mm-hmm. of peaceful, slow, mm-hmm. pleasant. And I'm happy to watch Toby Jones and, what's his name?
Mackenzie
Crook
mm-hmm.
just do their silly things. Where they talk to the crazy farmer and look for matchbox cars in the dirt.
Don't you, I watch the show and I'm like, I just wish my life was that slow.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, I it makes me long for a simpler time.
The most exciting thing that happens to them is that they move their little wand and it goes whoop. That's it. That's the big moment. Lister Gary wrote in and sent us a link that I'll put in the show notes that's fascinating. It is a story. It's a Boing Boing report about a story. It's also on CNET. It's gotten around. And the idea is that apparently, the accusation anyway, is that TV networks are trying to game the Nielsen ratings by misspelling the names of their shows in DVR metadata that is used by Nielsen to aggregate ratings. So Nielsen is aware of this and has said that they will try to fix it. But the idea is that, like, the TV news, the evening news, in order to try to game the system and get low rated weeks thrown out, they will change the name of their show in the metadata. So, for example, World News Tonight will end up being spelled WRLD and TONITE, or CBS Evening NWS. And that this apparently, because Nielsen's system is made of sticks, that's enough to fool Nielsen into thinking that's a different show. I don't know if this is true. I do find it hilarious that there may be somebody at TV networks who are trying to basically hack the ratings to make their shows look better than they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, I did not know that. That's
so thanks,
amazing.
Gary.
That's amazing.
That's a pretty funny. I guess the original source is the Wall Street Journal. I would like to go to the original source. And the problem with the Wall Street Journal is that it's paywalled. So I will put links to the Boing Boing or CNET story in the show notes.
Wow, that is something. Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time. I'm gonna push a couple of these letters, but I want to mention one last thing that happened this week, which is our friend of the podcast and your former office mate, I believe, Peter Hartlaub at the San Francisco Chronicle. He started a podcast. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. This first episode is talking about the movie Zodiac, but it's The Big Event is the name of the podcast. It's not yet on iTunes. I'm talking to Peter about how he could maybe expedite that, but I'll put a link in. You can listen to it on SoundCloud as long as they're still in business. And the funny exchange was that he said, I'm starting a podcast, and I replied to him, and I was like, wow, the Chronicle is back in business. And he said, I actually hunted down and salvaged the old TVTM equipment with Benny's help. It spoke to me like when Ray found Luke's lightsaber. Like, it's that moment of, the past has been unearthed here. Benny said that he liked that, and this means he can open up a 1,000-year-old bar and call it Benny's Corner. So the old TVTM references are coming fast and furious.
They are.
And I once again made the offer that if Benny and Joe and you can decide on some time to meet at the Chronicle or elsewhere, I will bring the equipment and we'll do a reunion podcast. I don't know if that'll ever happen. They're very busy, and you're in Oakland and I'm in Mill Valley, but maybe sometime. But
maybe it'll be a big event podcast, because that would be a big event.
That would be a big event. Peter Hartlaub could put it together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 years. 10 years since the TV Talk Machine launched a retrospective podcast. Sure. I was talking to Peter about this, and he said very nice things about you. He said you were a very influential person on him when you shared an office. So
he and Joe, among a few others, have really kept the Chronicle relevant for me. But I do want to take a little quick hilarious dig, or not hilarious, but wink, wink, funny dig at Peter and say, congratulations, Peter, for having a podcast in 2017.
Yep.
Next, I want you to get cable.
I'll just point out that when I listened to the beginning of the podcast, it's got a little thing that says, this is a Chronicle podcast. And I was like, oh, that's exciting. Because I remember the original TVTM, which began with the most befuddled introduction ever. You're listening to a podcast?
It's classic.
Yeah, from the San Francisco Chronicle.
One, yeah. Oh, my God. I love it. The more things change, Jason.
Yeah. But I hear the Chronicle will be getting Peter's podcast on iTunes in the next few months.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me. All right. We've come to the end. This has been a long one, an hour. But, you know, Emmy's blockbuster. What are you going to do?
It's a big one. Yeah.
All right. We'll be back next week. If you want to send us your feedback, tweet at us at TVTM. Email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. Post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are the best ways. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it. Tim, have a great weekend.
You too, and we will catch you next week.
Bye, everybody.